laugh slowly dies and dreams fade away.
Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. And in high school, the typical education is kind of centered around math, science, English, and there may be some arts in there also, but there's usually not a whole lot of variance. But if you're interested in things such as fashion design, graphic design, music production, stuff like that, where can you go? Here to talk with us about the opportunities for Columbus youth interested in maybe a different kind of education is the president of Through Mind's Eyes, Sean Williams, and instructor and media director, Brandon Locke. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So you talk about giving students a training in the creative industries. What do you mean by that?
Oh, what we mean by that is meeting the student where they are, with their creative talent or with their creative vision. Train them, you know, in a selected discipline that they choose and show them and direct them towards the several careers that might be involved or correlated with that specific discipline.
So are you focusing mostly on high school, or what kind of age groups are you looking at?
We focus on ages 12 to 24. Those are who are just entering high school, mm-hmm. and those who are maybe out of high school. You know, I'm not sure about college, maybe not have any direction. We focus on those too because, you know, sometimes, you know, those guys want to get enrolled, but, you know, not sure of what their niche is. So in the, you know, in the interim, you know, we work with those guys, you know, and ladies to, mm-hmm. you know, help give them some sort of direction. You know, they get their feet wet, come to the program, you know, and it, 9 times out of 10, you know, it encourages them to, you know, pursue that secondary education. You know, it like helps push them on. It's like a segue, yes.
Mm-hmm. And how much time does a student devote to their studies at Through Mind's Eye? Does it work with high school coursework? Is it supplemental to?
You know, we've designed a curriculum to work with the high school curriculum, with, you know, the extras that we add to it. Students would devote probably about 4 hours a week, you know, to attend me outside of their core studies.
Mm-hmm. So I noticed that you're located at Grooveview in Victorian Village. And Grooveview, they've been featured on this show. They're another Columbus institution that focuses on music and arts and technology education for, I think for them, it's mostly young adults. So tell me about your partnership with them.
Well, our partnership is awesome because the synergies are there. We teach the same things as far as like the creative industries, like they teach music. We touch on music as well at TME. The students that we have are essentially some of the same students that they look for, like mm-hmm. they're the same type of kids that they're getting. So the perk of that is basically we get to get to the students first while they're in high school. And we train them, and then when they want to pursue that post-secondary education experience, you know, Grooveview is there. They get a chance to be on campus, you know, use the facility, see everything that Grooveview has to offer. And it's a perk for them to be able to walk right into a college experience.
I think another thing about working with Grooveview is the facilities. It's probably $10 million worth of stuff there. And there aren't a lot of high schools that have that kind of stuff just sitting around. So the ability for a 16-year-old to walk in and be able to use a $10,000 mixing console in their first class is amazing. So that's an awesome opportunity. From a teaching standpoint, facilities are second to none.
Yes, indeed. I totally agree.
So speaking of Grooveview, I kind of discovered you from the recent InstaBand Battle of the Bands. So tell me a little bit about why stuff like InstaBand Battle of the Bands is important to young musicians.
It gives them an outlet, you know, all the hard work, you know, and the time that they spend, you know, honing their skill. Usually it's kind of hard and difficult for that age bracket, you know, to really find an outlet to reintroduce themselves to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And InstaBand is a awesome way for them to get that done, to be introduced back to the community, people who, have, you know, would have normally never heard of them. It's a chance to get everyone in one place, you know, and really display their talent. So InstaBand to me is like a huge platform, you know, that they normally wouldn't get. So, I mean, it's an awesome experience for all the kids.
Yeah, I was at one of the performances, the second performance. And, yeah, I noticed that every act was from a different high school. And the MC from the stage kind of forced everybody to just sort of like get out of their circle. So I was just kind of wondering, I mean, networking wise, how important is that at that age?
And it's really important. You know, when you're 15, 16 years old, you kind of operate just in a very small circle of friends and kind of in your own world. And the really great thing with events like InstaBand or even our program, because we draw from all of Central Ohio, is you get a chance to meet new people. You get a chance to meet new perspectives, especially, which is really great because you end up talking to people who have come from all sorts of backgrounds. People have different opinions. And I think that gives you, at least in my opinion, a better look at what the world is really like, what other opportunities are out there, what other lives are being led outside of your little bubble. And I think, you know, that helps a lot in terms of community building and also in their worldview, I guess.
Oh, yeah, certainly. You know, because as you put it, you know, kids sort of get stuck in the vacuum of their own high school, mm-hmm. the vacuum of their own perspective. And then we get everyone together like that. It does give the kids a chance to see, you know, hear music or, you know, network with people from different perspectives, which can enhance their craft. You know what I mean? Just be able to give them more to talk about, more to research, you know, and their room for growth is like huge. You know, the upside is huge when you get out there and network. You know, kids sometimes overlook that. But the kids, they, you know, are able to go to InstaBand and be involved in these programs. I mean, just to see, you know, them not only network, but take those networks, you know, and actually utilize them. Mm-hmm. And to see the products that they create after that is just like phenomenal. It's like mind blowing. Like, wow. You know, and that's all it took was just to for them to meet someone different that they normally wouldn't have met. And that's why we love like InstaBand, you know, and any other events that brings kids together, you know, because like they get stuck, you know, in their own world and, you know, just kind of keeps them in a closed mind, per se.
Yeah. So I understand that you've recently collaborated with Mayor Coleman.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
You know, we have a clip of that. Let's go ahead and take a listen to that.
Okay. I can be mayor of the city. Coleman. Earn a scholarship so I ain't got to take a loan. Now, hey, Keith, what you want to do when you grown? Harvest the education to bring green home. So much to learn. I was never a school board. About to graduate, started from a school board. I can be a reporter reclining in the newsroom. I stop the violence as police when I come through. I tell my mom her son gon' shine heat waves. Maybe be a fireman and keep the heat tame. I told my mom her son gon' shine heat waves.
So that's students of Through Mind's Eye collaborating on a piece with the city and with Mayor Coleman. Tell me about that.
Oh, man, that project was so fun. It was an opportunity for the kids to be able to meet Mayor Coleman and also to musically know what it is to write for some completely outside of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You know, Mayor Coleman and the people at City Hall were, you know, so welcoming to us and, you know, they allowed us just to have free reign and creativity for our, just to make an awesome project. So, you know, we called a couple of the kids, you know, told them the concept. And it was just really exciting to see how fast they came up with content. You know, they designed from the beat to every last lyric that you hear in that song. I mean, they really had everything written and completed probably within about 15 minutes.
And Through Mind's Eye just sort of facilitates projects like this.
Yes.
So how old were the kids involved in this project?
The kids that were involved in the project were 16, and Mr. Pace is
20.
20, just turned 20.
So you said you accept students 12 to 22. Is there any age that you find maybe kids latch on to create creative outputs easier, or is it? Is there like a too young or a too old?
I feel kind of late in high school is when I notice a lot of students start really seeking out creative arts. I think part of that has to do with they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. But another part of that, I think, is just the age that you're at. At some point, you kind of say, I have all these things going on inside me. I got to get them out somehow. And whether it's through graphic design or video or music, they're looking for an area, and some of them are not great at music, but they're awesome at graphic design. They're awesome at fashion, and they can express themselves that way, which is amazing. But I think the late teens and early 20s, I think for anyone really, is a difficult time. But I see a lot of creativity come out of those age ranges just because I think they have a lot of what's going on inside of them that they want to get out that's not always easy to get out.
Oh, yeah. And also, to expound on that, a lot of those kids are, you know, late high school, early college age, to the point where they're finally deciding that they don't know it all. You know, they were yielding the results that they wanted through the content and just through the knowledge bases they already had, they would be where they need to be. And they're starting to accept the fact that they need help. Mm-hmm. So we get a lot of those kids, and it's exciting to see the looks on their faces when we present them information that they never even heard of, and just to see what they do with it, you know, that like the light bulb goes off, and mm-hmm. it really makes them hungry, you know, to continue to educate themselves, not only in their craft, but we all know it's a business as well. You know, you have to have, you know, great content, but you have to also have to have a great business presentation. So we try to steer them, you know, in those directions, you know, like I said, we meet them where they're at, let them know where they can go, and then, you know, introduce them back to the community, you know, find, you know, different business organizations that would be willing to come in and take a listen, you know, network with them. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, it's all about, you know, them being prosperous in what they want to do and giving them an opportunity to do so.
So you mentioned graphic design. I know you also offer video production and fashion and more. So those are all unique disciplines along with music, but it kind of seems the way creative technology is evolving these days, it seems like everything is becoming more inclusive with each other. Do your students all follow one course, or are they free to sort of experiment amongst your different programs?
They flip around a decent amount. And part of that is we collaborate between classes. A lot of times, mm-hmm. even if you're doing video, you're going to be working in audio a little bit. So you at least get exposure to how am I supposed to mix this? How am I supposed to record this stuff? Because I'm not going to just do exclusively video. I'm going to have to work with audio or something like that, as an example. And same with graphic design, web design. A lot of the web kids always come to us and say, I need to put a video on my website. How do I make it? And it's easier for them to then have control over it and say, oh, now I know how to make a video. Now when I make my own websites or when I go market myself, I have a little bit of those skills. So there's a lot of overlap and collaboration between the different classes, which is exactly where the industries are going.
What about business stuff? Anytime I address a student body, because, you know, every now and then I'll talk to Capital or OSU of their technology majors just to give them a, you know, a point of view of a working professional. Sure. And one of the things that I always tell them was something that was never really addressed when I was in school or learning was you've got to learn business. You know, you've got to learn taxes. You've got to learn time management. So, you know, it seems like a lot of us spend so much time honing our craft and we, you know, you can get really good at it. But if you don't know how to market yourself, if you don't know how to handle the money, you're just as lost as if you were just out there on your own.
Oh, and that is so key because, like, that's one of the things that, you know, we as a society and these kids have in mind. Like, that's why small business, it's so popular, but that's why it fails at the alarming rate that it does. Because I just, in my opinion, I feel that is what you said is people hone their craft so much, they focus on the craft and not on the business and expect the craft to kind of make up for the shortcomings of the business practices. Mm-hmm. And that's when they fail. And at TME, what we do is we let it be known, like, from day one, you know, your skill is a business. And to be able to effectively market yourself and have success, your business practices almost have to be better than your skill. You know, yeah. Because, you know, time and time again, I mean, we can, you know, go through stories of or just listen on the radio or look at ads in the paper, just kind of look at different businesses that are out there. In our opinion, they might not be the best looking thing or have the best product, but I guarantee you their business practices is second to none, top notch, and that's why they are where they are. So, you know, we stress the importance of having good business etiquette and knowing business.
So, Sean, you're the founder of Through Mind's Eye. What what kind of got you working in the creative arts? Did you have a program like this?
You know, I never had a program like this. To be honest, as a youth, I was just astounded with video games. Oh my gosh, like Atari. Then the Nintendo came out. I was just so mind blown by just the graphics, you know, and just, you know, the music and the aesthetics of how they put it together. I was just like, just blown away by it. And as I got older, technology started just to be a part of my life, just how things were advancing, the graphics were getting better. Everything just was evolving so fast. And then I was working with kids. So it was kind of a natural fit, like my love for technology and creative arts. And then I always had a passion to work with kids just to see, you know, everyone have the opportunity to be successful. The marriage was, between the two was just, you know, it's a no-brainer. And, it, you know, and that's where this whole concept spawned from, you know, and meeting people like Mr. Locke, you know, help shape what it looked like. And, that, you know, thus here we are today.
How do you stay up on new technologies? I mean, you're teaching a technological-based coursework. Mm-hmm. How do you stay at the front of the game?
Research. You know, we have, me personally, I'm always, you know, in the newspapers, reading blogs, you know, searching the net, talking to, you know, each professor, because each one of our professors actually, you know, have jobs or are entrepreneurs in the field that they do. So they have to stay on top to be relevant. So just constant research, man. Social media helps, you know, so much in doing that. So that's how I personally stay up on, you know, the evolution of technology.
Well, guys, we're going to have to take a break. I think what you're offering the community is really great. And I really wish I had something like this when I was younger. I've been talking to Sean Williams and Brandon Locke from Through Mind's Eye. This is All Sides Weekend with Eric French. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Sunny day started out like any other, driving down the street in his rusty old clunky.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. It's not uncommon for kids to write songs, and just reflects their creativity, their thoughts, what they're feeling at the time. But most of them probably don't expect to have their songs or their lyrics set to music by professional musicians and then played on the radio. And that's exactly what the Dick and Jane Project is doing for kids in Columbus, Ohio. Joining us now to talk about that is the founder of Dick and Jane, Ben Shinneberry. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for so eloquently explaining the Dick and Jane Project there.
Okay.
You did a great job. Sometimes it takes hours. So,
I guess a lot of us are familiar with the Dick and Jane educational books. Is that right. Kind of where you drew this from?
It is. It's where, about 3 years ago, I ran across a Read with Dick and Jane book. And to make a really long story short, I had it sitting out on the coffee table one night when I was playing my guitar and started singing the, you know, really simple words that are in the books, you know, see Dick run, see Jane run, to music and putting emotion behind it and realizing, this is pretty cool. Music has a power in, you know, taking simple words and making you feel them. And from then on, you know, it turned into transforming elementary school kids' writings into songs, and then eventually into middle school kids and actually collaborating with the students. So, yeah, long story short, it did stem from Read with Dick and Jane.
So you go into a school and you have professional musicians and you meet with the kids. How does a song come about?
So a song comes about, it takes about 2 weeks of in-school collaboration with the students. So, you know, the students spend two or three days learning from a professional, you know, somebody that's, you know, that's recorded albums before, that's written lyrics. And so they spend, you know, classroom time learning those basics. And then for the next about week and a half, we bring in musicians and producers from Columbus that collaborate one-on-one with the students to create a song. And, you know, usually they start by, you know, getting ideas for lyrics, getting ideas for, you know, what do you really want to write about? And that's really one of the most important parts of our project is telling these kids that, you know, you might only be 12 years old. You might have never been in love. But surprise, you actually have things that people care about, that things that, you know, people could listen to on the radio and relate to and connect to. And so we focus a lot of the, you know, the beginning of those of that 2 weeks on that idea that these students have something to say. And then it's really, you know, through that, you know, whole experience, you know, empowering them and, you know, having the musicians and the producers take some of the lyrics and some of those ideas that the students are creating and making demo songs, making draft songs of them, which to the students are really, really high quality, something that the students wouldn't be able to do on their own. And having those producers come in and play them a draft song, you know, then those students really start getting going like, wow, like I'm going to make the best song in the world.
What kind of reception are you getting from, say, like the schools or even the parents of the kids?
Oh, I mean, it's, you know, the schools that we've worked in, you know, we work, right now we're in, or we just finished our work in Worthington Phoenix Middle School and Graham Expeditionary Middle School. And both of those schools are fantastic in that they have an hour at the end of their school day, which is basically for electives or some extracurricular activity. So the Dick and Jane Project fits perfectly within that section where the teachers are also able to come in and be a part of the songwriting process too. And we've had English teachers, you know, at Phoenix that have sat in and said, oh, I'm going to take an element of what you're doing here and, you know, and take it to my classroom. So the inclusion within the schools is a huge part of what we do.
Yeah, because this isn't your typical music or arts class or education model here.
It's not. It's, you know, it's kind of we kind of hide education within the cool aspect of writing songs. And, you know, and the students, it's not even important that they know that, you know, they actually are learning the importance of a metaphor or, you know, alliteration. But we don't tell them that. You know, it's really they just do it. And at the end of it, you know, you might just kind of like nudge them and say, hey, by the way, that was a pretty cool metaphor you did.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess what seems the coolest to me is just, like you said, the empowerment. I think a lot of people will kind of believe what you tell them. You know, if creating music is this, if there's this big gulf, whether talent or technologically, in between you and a finished song, mm-hmm. you kind of believe that. And when you walk into someplace and you're just like, okay, we're just going to do this.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that to me is the kind of staying power that's going to really branch out into other areas
and you talk about that empowerment, and sometimes that empowerment doesn't happen until the very end, until that student is sitting in a classroom and they have their radio on and one of the radio stations that we partner with play their song, and it's at that moment and they look around and they're like, and they, you know, they find a friend and they're like, I wrote that song. And it's the, you know, and sometimes the empowerment, you know, is at the very first day when they meet the, you know, the their producer or musician for the first time. But somewhere along that line, those students are getting, you know, to a whole nother level of believing in themselves.
Do you ever have to kind of coax it out of the student? Is anybody?
Oh, completely.
I mean, you're talking middle school, right? I've never been more awkward or shy in my life than middle school.
And you know, one thing we tell the students, you know, we usually have about an hour block at the end of that school day that we work with them. And I don't expect, and the producers don't expect the students to be in their best creative mindset from that specific hour of that specific day. What we more or less try to do is give them the tools to recognize when that creative expression is there. And it might, you know, it might come at 8 o'clock at night when, you know, you're cleaning the dinner table. But to know and to recognize when that happens, to be like, you know what, I've got a good idea for a lyric, and to write that down. And especially in middle school, I mean, that's, you know, it's completely unpredictable.
They're writing the lyrics and they're writing the songs, but you're bringing in professionals. Why not just have them perform it? I mean, wouldn't it be more personal for them to pull it off themselves?
If they can, they do. But for the most part, you know, I don't think any of the listeners that are listening now would would want to hear a 12-year-old singing, you know, a song. I don't think it would be up to that quality that they're looking for. And a lot of times, I guess I say that in terms of, you know, for your normal everyday radio listener to be driving home from work and to hear a song come on. And they don't, you know, they might not know what that song is, but, you know, they're bobbing their head to it. They're singing along by the end of it. They're thinking, oh, that's really catchy. And then the power that after when that song is then done and you know, the radio producer comes on and says, that was a Dick and Jane song lyrically written by 12-year-olds. And all of a sudden for that person to think, wow, I had no idea I was listening to, you know, the expressions of a middle school student. And so that's, you know, that's really kind of what we're going for. And, you know, to achieve that on a consistent basis, you know, having those professionals in there is necessary.
Yeah, it validates their creative expression.
Totally.
Do you think that kind of maybe invites more kids to be a part of it? Maybe like if you can't sing or you can't play an instrument, but you can.
Oh, completely. And
be creative.
We've even worked with students that you know, have a lot of social anxiety that really aren't even comfortable speaking to people. And for the, you know, we've had one of those students write a song, and the teachers, when she signed up to participate, were, you know, they couldn't believe it that she wanted to do this. And of course, if she was going to be singing in a studio, you know, there's no way she would have signed up. But in her head, she was thinking, I have things to say. I want to express myself. And you know, we allowed for that to happen.
Let's talk about that for a second. So I've noticed that it seems kind of therapeutic for some of them. I listen to some of your songs, and some of them are pretty heavy. Some of them are lighthearted and kind of goofy. Are there certain emotions or certain avenues you try to explore with these kids?
Yeah, I mean, we really, you know, personally, I believe that you know, there's hidden genius within all of these kids. And a lot of, you know, we have songs, you know, one of the not serious songs that you mentioned is like, you know, No me gustan pantalones. I don't like pants. And it drives me nuts sometimes when people say, oh, yeah, I've heard of that Dick and Jane project, No me gustan pantalones. And I just, you know, smack myself. Like, oh, why did we ever release that song? But on the other end of it is really those students that wrote that song are empowered by that song. And again, you know, they might not have expressed themselves exactly how they, you know, and find their inner emotions, but that song is a tool for them now as they go on in their you know, learning careers and write other things.
Well, let's compare a couple of your songs. We do have that track. Let's hear a few seconds of that one. Old dudes wear pants. I love pants.
We can't express ourselves if we have pants on.
Okay, so yeah, so that one is, it's fun, it's upbeat,
totally.
And I mean, it sounds great.
Yeah.
So let's listen to maybe something a little different. Let's listen to Ode to Mothers.
If I am a hand, you are a ring, the shines in the
That one's, I mean, it's still kind of lighthearted, but it's a little bit heavier.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, it's a love song, really. Yeah, to a mother. Yeah.
How do, you know, most pop songs are about love.
Right.
How do middle schoolers write about love?
They think that they do, and they really aren't. It's one of the most fascinating things about the Dick and Jane Project is, you know, I'm thinking of this one group in particular that was writing a song with us in February. There were a group of three students working on one song, and they had written over 50 different songs, different lyrics. And all of them would have gotten an A in English class, and, you know, anybody would read those, and they'd be like, wow, these are really great lyrics. But it frustrated the heck out of me because none of those lyrics meant anything to them. And a lot of them were love songs, and a lot of them were these cliche, you know, writings and things that there's no, you know, and I asked them, you know, what does this song mean to you? And they would, you know, I don't know, it's just, it's a song. I'm like, no, it's not. It, you know, this is not, you know, you need, you have something in your head that means something. And you know, it might be love, but you might not even know it's love. And that's why you write songs, is to really understand your, you know, what's going on in your mind. So yeah, they try to write love songs, but you know, I don't think they're there yet. Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the benefits for the kids involved. What about the musicians? What are your bands coming away from this with?
You know, it's I get that question a lot, and it's really hard to put into words what it really does do for the musicians. You know, I mean, every musician that we've worked with begs me, can I do it? I want to do another song. I want to do another song. Because, you know, one of the biggest reasons is a lot of these musicians are set in their ways of music. They do rock songs, they do punk songs, they do rap. And they love to be challenged by the Dick and Jane Project. Because when they meet the students are the ones that are dictating what the song is going to sound like. And so a lot of times for a musician to come in and, you know, if they've never done or produced a rhythm and blues song, you know, they take it as, you know, they accept that challenge. And we work with musicians that are able to accept that challenge and do it well. And so they usually are writing things that they would never write in, you know, for their own band. And for them, it's an experience in itself.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we're talking to Ben Shinnerberry, the founder of the Dick and Jane Project. We've only got time for a couple more questions, but I do have a few more things I'd like to ask. I'm really curious, have you followed the artistic growth of any of your students, maybe after they've moved on?
Yes. And a lot of times it's happened where I didn't plan to. In fact, I was just at a middle school that we had been working in last week. And I actually played, or somebody was playing No Me Gustan Pantalones. And there was a girl that heard that song, and she said, hey, somebody in my church was playing that song. And it turns out that the kid that she was talking about was somebody that had worked with Dick and Jane 2 years ago at another school. And he was, I think he emailed me the next day and said, hey, you know, Ben, I just wanted to let you know, I loved everything about Dick and Jane. Since then I started playing piano, and I'm in the church band now, which was really, 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 you know, those are the types of things. And again, that as an organization, we're going to start capturing more and following, because those, you know, those are the things that really mean something, that really show that, they not only were they empowered during the process or a little bit afterwards, but 2 years down the road that it's affecting their lives.
Have you ever had a concert of all your songs?
We've had, you know, when we release CDs, we have, you know, bands come and perform some of the songs. And again, it's we really like to make sure that the song quality, when those kids hear those songs, is of top notch. And a lot of times it's difficult to, you know, go onto a stage and have a kid hear that song for the first time and like cross your fingers that it's going to sound okay. So we tend to stick more to the radio play and to that professional recording. But yeah, we certainly have concerts and events. One coming up on May 2nd, we're releasing our 9 songs that day on the radio, and also at Kobo Live, we'll be having a live concert. So,
well, Ben, I wish we could talk more, but we're going to have to move on. This is All Sides Weekend. We've been talking to Ben Shinnerberry from the Dick and Jane Project. For more information on the Dick and Jane Project, visit our website, wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have a link to them on the site immediately after the show. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Thanks for being here, Ben.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we're listening to a track from a Columbus band, Way Yes. They are this month's local music spotlight, and the song you just heard was a part of the Mug and Brush sessions, which we featured last month. Way Yes has been producing music since 2010, and I think it's pretty safe to say they're a Columbus mainstay. Their songs are uniquely known for their global or maybe world music rhythms and a lot of creative sampling. They've picked up some local and national acclaim, and I'm joined in studio right now by Glenn Davis and Max Lewis, members of the band Way Yes. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I guess tell me how you got started in Columbus.
Do you want to field that?
Yeah.
I think it'd be better for you.
Basically, Travis Hall is the other songwriter in the band, and we had been playing together since we were in high school, and this Way Yes was sort of like our first serious band, where most of the things we had done in the past were sillier or just us kind of like learning the ropes of how to write songs, how to record our own music, how to make things that anyone would care about. And so Way Yes was like the first time that we really took things seriously and kind of finished up at Ohio State and was like, I want to, you know, make a real band now. And so we played for a few years before coming to Max actually started as a recording engineer, like producing our first couple EPs, and then we just kind of tricked him into joining our band.
Yeah, I guess Way Yes proper. I mean, I was at all the early shows, like courting the band in a way.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, we got to do something. And I had heard one of Glenn's side projects prior, because I met Glenn first, and I liked that stuff, and that kind of fell into Way Yes, because some of those songs ended up falling into Way Yes, and then I was pumped about it, and then I recorded them at my studio at the time, and yeah, like Glenn said, I got duped into being in the band, and then kind of escalated from there.
Yeah, we've continued to add other members and collaborators and stuff.
Yeah, so I've noticed you tend to have your core band members, but it seems like every live performance or every video or whatever, there seems to be other people kind of in the mix.
Yeah, well, sort of. It depends on what's going on at any given show. Yeah, we try to sometimes mix things up, but basically the number of people in the band continue to grow. We've added Tim Horak a couple years back, when he was supposed to just be a special guest for a ComFest, and he plays aux percussion, and we sort of, after we played with him, we were like, we don't ever want to play without you. And so he's, you know, everybody that's joined since Travis and I feel like we've sort of had, hey, do you want to like play with us for something? And then we're like, do you want to just keep playing with us forever? And that's sort of where Tim came in the band. And recently Sharon Udo, we started playing, with her because we needed somebody that could play keyboard, and she's the best keyboard player in Columbus right now, I think.
She's definitely helped fill out some of the space.
Yeah, so in the Mug and Brush session that you're sort of playing, you can hear her like keyboard lines, and she's like so quick to pick up any song that you would throw at her. It's been really natural and easy to bring her on board. And so right now, I guess our standard band is the five of us.
So let's talk about percussion for a second. Mm-hmm. Max, I understand you're a percussionist in the band. It doesn't kind of look like your band uses the traditional rock and roll four-piece drum set.
Yeah, I guess Way Yes proper is not the traditional kit. I'm playing, it's kind of like a inside out kit in a way. The main drum I'm playing is a surdo, or there's other pronunciations, but that's a Brazilian, it's like the largest part of like a Brazilian line drum. It's like their like big bass drum. And that has some real, oomph to it. And then through the magic of, you know, little doohickeys and claws and things to add to it, I've, you know, put together a couple other more ethnic sounding instruments to it that kind of serve as like toms or snares or things like that. The top of the surdo can be used as a snare in a way too. So I try to manipulate it in as many ways as possible. The sides of it can be played, and all kind of centers around that one piece of gear. And then Tim, is kind of doing more of the double time percussion, the quicker stuff, and he has timbales, bongos, congas, literally bells and whistles, and you know, the two of us together kind of have this groove at this point since we've been playing together a lot, and I feel like you know, kind of there's some glue there now.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys actually study world percussion? I mean, are you up on your fundamentals and rudiments?
Not necessarily. I mean, I know some of the very basic principles, and I've listened to a good portion of world music, but it's never been like a academic thing, I don't think. It's more of like, that sounds cool. I wanna play with that idea.
Yeah, a lot of just imitation, you know, like rather than like the academic study, is just sort of like, wow, this groove is amazing. Let's start seeing if we can play that with the drums that we have and see what happens.
Yeah, we're faking it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Dick and Jane project and your connection with that. We just had Ben on, and he kind of explained the process. And I know that Way Yes is one of the featured artists. What's your experience with this project been like?
I've been the one closest to the tie with Dick and Jane, doing workshops and other things, and as a producer. Working with Dick and Jane has probably been the most rewarding thing that I've been able to do with music, because I feel like there's a direct opportunity to sort of give away, you know, things that I've learned, and just like connect with children. The kids in the Dick and Jane project that I've gotten to meet have just all been amazing, and it's so fun to take them from knowing basically nothing about songwriting to having a completed song that they're proud of. And there's some sort of empowerment that happens in that process that's just magical almost. It's addicting, and it's something that I hope I can continue to do as long as Dick and Jane project is around.
Very cool. So your music, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it. I've had a hard time describing your band when I tell people about it. I guess the first thing that comes to mind is maybe world music, but even that kind of isn't quite it. It's definitely got a pop edge, but it's kind of even within that shifted from recording to recording. To listen to Herringbone, especially the first cut, to hear how the vocals have changed so much, I'm just wondering. I mean, how do you progress as a musician within this framework?
With Way Yes, I feel like it's always been a combination of various influences, and sometimes really opposing influences in a way that it makes it really hard to describe. When people ask me, I generally just try to avoid the question or say that it's pop music. I don't know how to explain it either, but there's like, I think the recordings shift as our influences shift, and at any given time, like, any given song is probably a combination of three or four strong influences from different places. And so a lot of times we're trying to imitate things that we like, but we're mashing it up with other things that you wouldn't normally think to mix it with. And the outcome is usually sort of missing the mark even of what we were going for. And it sort of becomes this kind of like inbred sound that is bouncing back and forth when Travis and I write songs and sort of inspire each other even. And Max has started to write some new songs for the band too. And so we're like, it's just getting to this place where it's really hard. It makes sense that it's hard for you to describe it.
That's when we feel satisfied. Yeah. Is when it gets hard to describe. Yeah. I feel like, oh yeah, now that's a Way Yes song.
and I could kind of hear, it sounds like there's a lot of non-musical influence coming into something like this. I how sometimes you'll listen to a band and you're like, oh yeah, I know what they listen to, and you kind of hear just a direct this came from this came from this. When I listen to Way Yes, it sounds like there's a lot more going on than just you guys excited about a certain song you heard and trying to recreate it.
Yeah, that's definitely, I don't think it's like being excited about any one song. I think, like Glenn was saying, it's being excited more about like a few songs and a few ideas, and then just seeing how they kind of get mashed together. And, you know, as far as the when I've seen them write songs, it's always been kind of a call and response to each other. And like Lem was saying, I maybe started, you know, picking up some of what they've been doing, and I feel like it's kind of like us all talking to each other and seeing what happens after, you know, somebody does something, there's a reaction to it. And what ends up happening is you end up with a lot of songs, we found out, at least for this new record.
And sometimes we're working on a new record right now, and we have all the songs written. We're just trying to decide what we want to record together and what's going to make it on the album.
And how we want to record it. There's so many factors right now.
But there's almost like a pendulum swing against what we've already done. You said from recording to recording, it sort of changes. And so usually our goal is to just not do the same thing twice.
Well, let's hear something from your Orange Udio release. I pretty much always have a sweet tooth with pop music, so kind of long, extended instrumental sections usually don't catch my interest, but your songs do. I mean, they have a nice pop hook, but they're still kind of weird enough to kind of keep your brain intellectually hanging on there.
I think we're pretty conscientious of that. We've kind of gone back and forth with some of that with the songwriting process. It's funny because, you can get into this mindset where you feel like a song feels like it drags on, and then all of a sudden one day you wake up and you hear the song again, you're like, that's not even long enough. You know, your brain kind of flips on the idea every once in a while. But we've always, when we're doing something that's long and drawn out or feels like that, find ways to maybe not make it so much so. And usually the answer is adding in something that grabs your attention in some way.
I think there's usually a decision where it's like, this is either going to be a 3.5 minute pop song, and or it's going to be like a 6.5 minute like
pop song.
but then there's like that deliberate choice to like include the repetition and like the longer instrumental sections. And
we like the repetition. Yeah. There's something fun about it.
So you mentioned you have a new record coming out soon, or a new record about to be recorded soon.
Yeah. Not coming out soon, probably.
What else do you have on the horizon?
We have a show coming up April 19th at the Wex, opening up for Saint Seneca for their album release. So.
Yeah, pretty much that's the only thing other than working on this record that we have. We're really excited to play that show. It's going to be a big show with Saint Seneca's album coming out. And this is our first time playing at the Wexner Center, so we're pretty excited about that. I think tickets are available online if anybody's wanting to get them. I'm sure that with Saint Seneca's, you know, current popularity, that will probably sell out. So
get your tickets.
Yeah. But yeah, so other than that, we just did the Mug and Brush sessions that you sort of mentioned earlier. The second session just came up on YouTube, and you can search for those. A couple new songs that are going to be on the next record we played on there. And then other than that, we're just kind of like hunkering down and working on a new record. Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we've been talking to Glenn and Max from the band Way Yes. Guys, I really like your sound. I think you got a cool thing going on. I'm really glad you came in today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
This show was produced by Amy Beach with help from Joel Nadler. And I'd like to thank our line producer, Amy Jurevich, producer Michael DeBonis, and of course, Ann Fisher for all of their help. I'm Eric French, and we'll be back next month.